Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, June the 22nd, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have a guest scheduled tonight, Mike Hogan, Chief Advancement Officer for Paws for Purple Hearts. We're waiting to connect him up to the show, so we're going to go to news first. But before the news, let's go over to Richard Hurley. How's it going, Richard?
Hey, David, and how's everybody doing out there? And hope all you dads had a nice Father's Day. And just found out that Mike is with us. But, yep, hope everybody's doing well and staying healthy with this pandemic still raging here, especially here in Florida. It's quite the scene. But I got to say, I was in the mall yesterday with my kids, and it's great to see everybody was all masked up. I think International Mall down in Tampa, I think it was about 99.9% of everybody in the mall had a mask on, and that was great to see. Before we get back to David and our guest tonight, just want to remind everybody that this is a call-in show. We do encourage you to give us a ring on 1-888-627-6008 and let us know what's going on in your world, how you're dealing with the VA. Veterans, you've got a lot of stories to tell. And you probably have a lot of information that you can pass on to other veterans. I know I see the Camp Lejeune water contamination website that's got about 17,000 members on that Facebook page. And that's the administrator there is Mike Partain. I'm sure a lot of you know who Mike is. He's going to be our guest next week, David. And looking forward to having him on the show. But again, in the meantime, if you want to call us, call us at 1-888-627-6008. And let's go back over to David and our guest tonight, Mr. Mike Hogan.
Thanks, Richard. Yeah, let me introduce our guest. Michael W. Hogan is the Chief Advancement Officer for Paws for Purple Hearts, a 501c3 nonprofit organization committed to supporting America's veterans and current service members. He joined the team at Paws for Purple Hearts in October 2018. Before joining that organization, Mr. Hogan spent the previous 24 years in the institutional advancement profession working at two great institutions, the United States Military Academy at West Point and Culver Academies, a leading independent college prep school in Culver, Indiana. Mr. Hogan was born and raised in Texas. He graduated from West Point and served on active duty for 7 years as an infantry officer. He's a graduate of the U.S. Army Ranger Airborne and Air Assault Training Courses. He served with the 25th Infantry Division at Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, and later commanded a company in the 1st Battalion, 26th Infantry at Fort Dix, New Jersey. We look forward to learning more about the great things that his organization, Paws for Purple Hearts, does. So let's welcome Mike Hogan to the Veterans News Hour. Welcome, Mike. How's it going?
It's going fantastic, David. Thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here, and can't thank the Veterans News Hour enough for the opportunity to share our story.
Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks. I'm so glad you could be with us. I know there's a lot you can tell us about Paws for Purple Hearts, so let me just begin by asking you if you could tell us about its mission, its people, how it got started, those sorts of things.
Absolutely. Well, the mission of Paws for Purple Hearts is we're dedicated to improving the lives of America's warriors. Those are both our veterans and our current military. Who are facing mobility challenges and trauma-related conditions, such as post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injuries, and the like, by providing the highest quality service dogs and canine-assisted therapeutic programs, and also building public awareness about the important role that these service dogs play in helping warriors along the road to recovery. Paws for Purple Hearts. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead, Mike.
That's okay. We were founded as a pilot research program at the Bergen College of Canine Studies in Pengrove, California, back in 2006. And in 2008, we started a pilot program at the VA Palo Alto Healthcare System there in Menlo Park, California. And just a couple of years after that, we were incorporated as a 501c3 in 2011. And since then, have added two new facilities, training facilities for our service dogs in 2015, one in Reuther Glen, Virginia, and another in Fairbanks, Alaska. And then we expanded to two additional sites in San Diego and in San Antonio in 2018. So our headquarters is in Pengrove, California, and we've got five training facilities spread around the country right now.
Wow, that's great. Now, you mentioned something called canine-assisted warrior therapy. Tell us about that. What does that mean?
Absolutely. Canine-assisted warrior therapy is a very unique program that Paws for Purple Hearts began. And what it does is it reduces the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder and traumatic brain injury. And we do that by involving our warriors that have those conditions in the preparation and in the training of service dogs that we know that will ultimately be given as a service dog to another warrior. So this activity of these warriors being involved in helping to train service dogs is highly beneficial because it gives our warriors a sense of purpose and a sense of mission, because these warriors know that they're helping to train and prepare a service dog for one of their comrades. Hence our motto, Warriors Helping Warriors.
I see. And Mike, where is this canine-assisted warrior therapy done? I know you mentioned, you described earlier about having facilities at various points around the country. You know, if a veteran is listening to us from, you know, Arkansas, for instance, what would be the options for that veteran?
Yes, the that's one of our challenges right now, David, is we're trying to grow our organization so that we're in a position to help all of our veterans. We're a fairly young organization, and we're not exactly where we want to be just yet in terms of having a facility close to every single veteran. The canine-assisted warrior therapy is done either at one of our training facilities or it's done at a VA facility.
I see.
And so what we've tried to do is locate our training facilities near VA facilities so that we can take advantage of being able to access all the veterans that are using those particular facilities.
I see. I see. Now, tell us more about the kinds of service dogs that your organization provides, and are those potentially available to veterans anywhere? I know you just described you have certain places for the training, but let's start with the question. You know, what kinds of service dogs do you provide? Because I know in this day and age, everything's so specialized.
Absolutely. You know, we have some very unique services that our dogs provide. First would be mobility service. So this would be for an individual that has a physical disability who can benefit from the help with tasks such as retrieving items or pushing buttons or turning lights on in a room, opening a refrigerator door. So someone has a mobility issue. That could be someone that has lost a limb or could be a quadriplegic. We have service dogs that are trained specifically to address those issues. And then we also have the trauma service dogs that specific focus is on assisting our veterans that have post-traumatic stress disorder. And what these dogs do is they are able to detect type situations, and they're able to take actions to prevent those panic attacks and disrupt those kinds of behaviors.
I see.
And so those are the two primary types of dogs that we provide. And David, we use two breeds. We use Labrador Retrievers, and we use Golden Retrievers, or a cross of those two breeds. And what we found from the research from the Bergen College of Canine Studies is that we want to make sure that we are giving a dog to a veteran that we are certain is going to be a lifelong servant and a battle buddy that this veteran can count on in all situations. And so what we found is that with our Golden Retrievers and Labrador Retrievers, that this is a perfect breed for a service dog. And these dogs are very people-oriented, and they have a strong desire to please the person they're working for. They have a real service ethic. They have very calm temperament, and they're able to wait patiently for their handler. They have soft mouths for retrieving items, which is an extremely important task for our service dogs. They're also very popular with the public, and so they invite social interaction, which is something that many of our clients really need. Mm-hmm. And generally, these breeds are large enough that they can complete tasks that require long reach or that require moderate weight bearing. So if you're going up some stairs, then that dog could be assisting you as you go up or down a set of stairs. So those are the types of dogs and the very specific breeds that we use.
I see. Now, Mike, I understand that out there in the world that, you know, there are groups that will sometimes charge many thousands of dollars to veterans or individuals that need service dogs that are trained to do what you described. Tell us about Paws for Purple Hearts and what it does as far as providing these service dogs for veterans.
Absolutely. Thank you, David. I think that Paws for Purple Hearts is extremely fortunate in that we've got some wonderful donors and supporters. And with their extreme generosity, we're able to provide this canine-assisted warrior therapy at no charge to our veterans.
Wow.
And we're also able to provide the actual service dogs that we place with veterans at no cost to the veteran. Beyond, there's a two-week training period at the end, and we typically ask the veterans to cover their travel expenses to that two-week training period. But beyond that, there's no cost for our warriors.
I see. Well, great. And that's wonderful that the organization can provide those service dogs for free. Before asking you if you would to share some of the success stories you've seen in the couple years you've been there, I want to first ask you, though, because part of the mission of Veterans NewsHour for the last 3.5 years has been to promote organizations that are helping veterans, and we do that. We want to give you an opportunity to tell listeners where they can find that information and how they can donate, how they can support Paws for Purple Hearts. How can they do that?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, David. The easiest way to find out more information about Paws for Purple Hearts would be to come to our website. That is pawsforpurplehearts.org. And that'll take you right to our website. And you can find out, you know, how do you fill out an application to get a service dog? Where are we located, where to get your questions answered, where to make a gift. And then you also can go from our website right to all of our different social media. So you can go to Instagram or our Facebook page or our YouTube to watch our videos. There's nothing more enjoyable than to see one of our dogs, you know, changing the lives of a veteran. And again, that is pawsforpurplehearts.org is our website. And that's where you can get information. You can also make a gift if you want to make a gift.
Well,
another
great
way to make a gift is you could text the word Purple Paws to 707070. Again, Purple Paws, P-A-W-S, to 707070. That's an easier and quicker way to make a donation if you wanted to do so.
Well, that's great. And, Mike, I recently received a letter from Dr. Benita Bergen, the president, a very impressive letter, and it included a letter from an Army veteran named Steve Moore. It was an incredibly touching letter. I'm not going to read the letter on the air here, but it was a combat veteran who had served overseas and had been exposed to just some heart-rending trauma, death and destruction of war. And I was really touched by those things. I wanted to give you an opportunity, if you would, to share with us some of the success stories of veterans touched by your organization with these service dogs. Anything you'd like to share with us?
Absolutely. Thank you very much, David. It's interesting you mentioned Steve. The last time I was out in California, I had the opportunity to visit with him a little bit. He's just a great man. And a great veteran. I'd like to read a quote that he shared with us. He has a service dog named Hannah that he received from Paws for Purple Hearts. He says, "One day I was Googling for help, looking for anything to mitigate this misery. By chance, what I believe was a miracle, I found Paws for Purple Hearts. I believe it saved my life. Working with Hannah, I saw things in a different light. Working with her, I could remember some piece of what I used to be, and I was ready to be that person again. Hannah gave me confidence. She gave me purpose. She gave me a sense of belonging again." And so that's just one example of one veteran that we've been able to, using our wonderful canine friends, have a tremendous impact in changing their lives. I've got another story that I'd like to share with you, David, if I could.
Sure, absolutely.
Have you read the book or seen the movie Black Hawk Down?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Okay. Well, like me, you probably vicariously experienced the fear that our soldiers felt when they fought for their lives.
Right.
And I want to tell you about one of those soldiers named Chad. Chad's a real warrior. He served in the Army for 20 years. His very first tour of duty was as a 19-year-old in Mogadishu, Somalia.
Wow.
And after those multiple helicopters were shot down, Chad was one of the first soldiers to go in and rescue the crews. He was also one of the last out. Now, that was his first tour of duty. And on his eighth and final tour of duty, he was fighting in Afghanistan. And a Toyota, traveling at 60 miles an hour, crashed into the side of his vehicle, and a 2,000-pound bomb inside this Toyota detonated upon impact.
Wow.
And Chad woke up in Walter Reed Army Medical Center. He was suffering from traumatic brain injury, and he was afraid to leave his hospital room and really had to force himself to do so. His therapy and his medication did not work. Chad was hopeless until he found two puppies. They were there in the lounge area. He curled up in the crate with them on the floor. Those puppies' names were Newton and Niles. They were his lifesavers. And from that day forward, he would visit with them every day during this 8 month stay that he had in Walter Reed.
Wow.
Chad said, I would fidget through therapy sessions, doctor consultations, sleepless nights, and the only way I'd make it through was thinking about going to see Newton and Niles. Not long after Chad got out of Walter Reed, he got a call from Paul's for Purple Hearts, telling him that he would indeed receive a service dog. And you can imagine the joy that Chad had when he learned that Newton was going to be his service dog. So there's another gentleman that, in this case, Newton, you know, has changed his life forever. And we were just thrilled to play a small role in that, making that connection and getting Chad connected with his lifetime battle buddy.
That's awesome. You know, and it's the old cliche that dogs are man's best friend. And this is truly an example of that fact. And I really applaud what you and everyone in your organization are doing for veterans. I got a couple more questions, but I'm sure my co-host Richard Hurley may have some too.
Yeah.
Richard?
Yeah, first of all, I commend what you're doing there, Mike. And I'm also a lab lover.
Ah,
I've owned, I currently have a chocolate lab. And in my lifetime, I'm 61 now, so in my lifetime, over 35 years, I've had labs, black labs.
Wow.
And the way you have described them, and I've given labs to my kids as well, and the way you are describing them is right on. I mean, anybody who has never seen that breed or had a chance to really love that breed, you describe them perfectly. I have one great lab story. I was canoeing down the Guadalupe River outside of San Antonio, which is almost a class 5 rapid river, with a bunch of class 5 rapids on there. And I used to always bring my dog was Bosco, and I used to bring Bosco with me, and Bosco would sit in the front of the canoe, and we would do all these rivers. And but when I'd get to a rapid, I would take Bosco and put Bosco on the shore along with whatever supplies I want, because I usually spend the night on the canoe, on the river. And I had a friend with me this particular time. And so I tied Bosco, we called him Boss, up on the side of the river there and just said, you wait here. Now, we run this rapid, and it was wild. And we went flying over. And the canoe goes flying one way. My buddy goes flying another way. I'm flying down, you know, down this rapid. And I look, I go flying by Bosco, and that dog breaks the line and comes running the length, you know, running along the shore. Next thing you know, Bosco jumps into the rapid.
Wow.
And at this point, I've got my arm kind of on the canoe, but there's no way that I can do it. My buddy's, like, going somewhere. And Bosco comes out to me, and I kid you not, turns around and puts his tail out of the water a couple of inches so I could find it. And I grabbed that tail, and it took us about 50 yards, but we eventually, with his help, we pulled that canoe to shore. So,
wow.
You know, that's a real life story, and, you know, I'm sold on labs. It's just a great breed. But I was just wondering, you know, what are some of the goals that Paws for Purple Hearts has over the next year or two?
Well, I would tell you that, Richard, our one of our top goals is we're really trying to expand up into the Northeast. And so we'd like to open a facility in the Northeast so that we can take care of all our veterans in that part of the country. So that's clearly one of our goals. Another goal is just to be able to grow the organization within the regions where we're currently located. You know, adding an additional trainer at each one of the facilities, and with a new trainer means at least 3 more dogs that are being trained. And the unique thing about this canine-assisted warrior therapy is that one of our service dogs, it goes through a 2-year training period right after they're born, and they learn over 100 different commands. And it's during that two-year training period where they are participating in this canine-assisted warrior therapy program, whereas other warriors are helping to train them. Obviously, our professional dog trainers are there, and the behavioral therapists are there as part of observing the therapy and contributing to it. But each one of these dogs impacts about 60-plus veterans during that two-year period. So it's not just the one individual that's ultimately going to get this lifelong battle buddy, but during their training period, they're having an extremely positive impact on about 60 different veterans through this canine-assisted warrior therapy.
That's awesome. David, what do you...
That's why I really hope that our listeners will jump in and support Paws for Purple Hearts. And Mike, I know just from what I've read, as you were saying earlier, your organization provides these service dogs to veterans for free, and yet some organizations may charge up to $25,000. So there's I expect there's probably a significant need and benefit that your organization would have for donations. So,
absolutely.
Go ahead. Tell us again how our listeners can support, how they can either support in kind or financial donations to help Paws for Purple Hearts really grow across the country.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I think that one thing, David, that I just want to share with your audience. Is just the amazing impact that these dogs have on our warriors. When you're fortunate enough to be able to observe a training session and you see 10, 15 warriors walk into a therapy room and they're a pretty reserved, a pretty quiet group. A lot of them are looking down at their feet. And then after about 20 minutes of interacting with the dogs, they come alive. It's just amazing how these dogs are able to lift their spirits and, cause them to release that oxytocin drug in their brain that they call the love hormone that promotes that feeling of well-being and bonding. And it's just amazing to see that firsthand and know that these service dogs are really changing lives when the warriors come in for this therapy. And then we know that the warriors are really helping to train a future service dog for one of their comrades. And so it's great to be a part of that and to see the impact that our service dogs can have on our warriors.
That's great. And Mike,
you'd ask about, I'm sorry?
I was going to ask you also, just I know you said earlier in the show, but if you could repeat for us where the specific training locations are so veterans that are nearby those that want to get involved in the therapy, the training, or ultimately to benefit by receiving one of the dogs. Where, again, are those specific locations?
Sure, absolutely. We've got a facility in Menlo Park, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area. And then down in Southern California in San Diego, we also have a second facility. We have one in San Antonio, one in Anchorage, Alaska, and then one facility in Reuther Glen, Virginia. And then our headquarters is in Pengrove, California.
I see.
So those are the six locations where we're currently located.
Okay. Well, very good. Very good. Mike, before we go, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about Paws for Purple Hearts?
Well, we're always looking for volunteers In those locations, we're looking for volunteers that could help as a puppy parent, which is someone that allows one of our service dogs in training to come into their home on the weekends or in the evenings so that the dog gets socialized in what's a home environment all about. So that's a great way that volunteers are able to help. We've got other volunteers that are helping in any number of different ways, whether it's at helping at a facility or maybe they've got some expertise in social media or photography and are helping take pictures for us, any number of different ways that our volunteers can help. And so I'd encourage someone to come to our website. Again, it's pawsforpurplehearts.org, O-R-G. And again, you've got all of those social media links from our website to Instagram, to Facebook, to LinkedIn, to YouTube, where you can find out, you know, see the actual dogs participating in the training. And it's just a wonderful way for people to support. And certainly we'd encourage you to consider making a financial gift. With COVID-19, it's tough for all charities, and certainly our expenses haven't reduced any because of this pandemic, and we certainly would greatly appreciate anyone's support.
Well, great. And Micah, thank you so much for being on our show and sharing with us all the great things being done for America's veterans by Paws for Purple Hearts. We wish you and everyone in Paws for Purple Hearts the greatest continued success, and you have an open invitation to come back on our show and keep us updated anytime that's convenient for your schedule.
Well, thank you very much, David. I really appreciate that and look forward to an opportunity to come back. Thanks to you and to Richard for the great service that you provide to our veterans through the Veterans News Hour. And just so happy that we could be a part of it tonight.
Thank you, Mike, and good luck and best wishes.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
Thank you. Well, thanks again to our guest, Mike Hogan, the Chief Advancement Officer for Paws for Purple Hearts, a nonprofit organization committed to supporting America's veterans and current service members. As he described, their mission is to improve the lives of America's warriors facing mobility challenges and trauma-related conditions such as post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury by providing the highest quality service and assistance dogs and canine-assisted therapy programs. It's a great organization. Help them continue their mission and expand to more places around the country. Again, it's Paws for Purple Hearts, and their organization's website is Paws, P-A-W-S, 4, F-O-R, purplehearts.org. So thanks again to Mike. Rick, I know we have some news tonight. Before that, anything you'd like to discuss?
Well, I just wanted to give an update. I'm getting ready for my virtual hearing on Thursday, and what's unique about this one, and I've done, as you know, David, I've done a bunch of them from my office, which is, I'm not going to say it's routine with the Board of Veteran Appeals, but it's becoming more common, and especially now with this pandemic, it's really becoming the alternative means of letting these hearings go forward without having to have the veteran go into a compromised area, such as a regional office,
right,
or even traveling to a regional office. So, but what's unique about this one is that my client lives up in Virginia. The hearing is going to be in Roanoke, or the regional office that's handling it is in Roanoke, and the judge is in Washington, D.C., and I'm in Florida.
Wow.
So we've taken the last Thursday, Friday, and again today to do a lot of dry runs because, you know, you got to make sure, you know, normally the veteran would be relying upon me, not that I'm some great techie, as you well know, David, but would be relying upon me to have my system up and running, and we would he and I would be, or she and I would be sitting in my office, and we'd have the hearing directly one-on-one with the judge. But in this case, the veteran's going to be up in his own home. So we've had some trial runs to make sure that his computer's up and running and ready to go come 12:30 on Thursday. But more importantly, and I want to get this message out to veterans out there. The one concern that any attorney would have in this particular situation would be that your client is not sitting next to you.
Yes.
So right. that during the hearing you'd be able to, you know, have some, you know, touch here and, you know, kind of like guide him along during the hearing, and you know, you're not gonna have that, the benefit of that. So you know, we're gonna improvise and have our cell phones on and be able to text back and forth while we're doing the hearing, especially if he has any questions of me. But the other thing is, and you and I, David, we do this all the time, which is, you know, we prepare a statement for our clients to read during the hearing. And so this time, more so than ever before, you know, got to make sure that that statement is rock solid and that the veteran knows to stick to it. Because you don't want to end up going off script, and then the veteran says something that might compromise one of the issues before the BVA. So it's, you know, it's been very interesting, and looking forward to Thursday. But it just shows again the you know, how the BVA is you know, getting creative, and lawyers are getting creative, and we're all going through this process together to help better serve veterans.
Right,
and I, you know, I take my hats off to the Board of Veteran Appeals. To, you know, we've been doing this now for about 18 months, but you know, now we're getting to another area, and everybody's very, you know, unlike dealing with the VA, which I give them a big fat F. I'm sorry to say that, but there's no communication coming out of the VA anytime, and I'm so disappointed. I feel so bad for our veterans, but when it comes to the Board of Veteran Appeals, I got to tell you, they answer emails. They pick up the phone and call me. I mean, it's you know, it's just unbelievable how the communication exists. You know, they're not afraid of their shadow. They step right up. They ask me what more they can do for me. I ask them questions because, again, I'm not a techie. Ask them, you know, how do I push the button? and they're right there to help you out. So Board of Veteran Appeals people are they're good eggs. So well, I just wanted to pass that along.
That's interesting because, you know, they are part of the VA, as we know. They're just at the top of the pyramid. And it's unfortunate that their skills and their expertise and their use of high tech hasn't filtered down to the regional offices, which I think is what you were describing. And I take it when you say you were giving them a grade of F, that wasn't F for fantastic, I guess,
that's
right?
That's not fantastic. I mean, to give you an example, there were two people up at one is in the Roanoke office, and then the other gals in the BVA up in D.C. Today I had two emails go to her, three to the fella in Roanoke. I got to tell you, within 30 minutes, I got a response each time. I mean, I've emailed.
I'm saying that my connection is sort of breaking up here. I don't know if it's
I can
my
hear
end
you okay.
through the broadcast.
I can hear you okay. But, you know, I mean, you and I, David, we send out emails to the VA that never get answered. And within 30 minutes, I'm getting a response from the gal in D.C. and the guy in Roanoke. I that's just good stuff. You know, I can work with that. And the veterans can be better off for it. So, all right, let's turn to some news from Washington. This past week on June 17th, 2020, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs announced the release of the president's roadmap to empower veterans and end a national tragedy of suicide. And again, once again, you know, they love their acronyms, and this is called PREVENTS, P-R-E-V-E-N-T-S. It's a nationwide plan to raise awareness about mental health, connect veterans and others at risk of suicide to federal and local resources, facilitate focused and coordinated research into suicide. The roadmap is the result of an executive order President Trump signed on March the 5th, 2019, calling on the Department of Veteran Affairs, Defense, Health and Human Services, and several others to develop a comprehensive strategy for ending the national tragedy of suicide. The order was signed as data continue to show 132 Americans, including 20 service members, Guard and Reserve members, and veterans, die on the average each day by suicide. Veteran suicide is a tragedy this country started measuring in the decades following the Civil War, but one that sadly went unaddressed for generations, said President Trump. Today, my administration is taking steps to ensure the men and women who bravely fought for us when they were called will be given the care and attention they need during some of their darkest hours. Our veterans will lead the way for all Americans as we end the stigma that for too long has kept us from talking openly about mental health and thwarted our efforts to provide the kind of assistance and support that will save lives. Suicide prevention is VA's highest clinical priority, and the department is taking significant steps to address the issue, said VA Secretary Robert Wilkie. But just as there is no single cause of suicide, no single organization can end veteran suicide alone. That's why PREVENTS aims to bring together stakeholders across all levels of government in the private sector to work side by side to provide our veterans with the mental health and suicide prevention services they need. By employing a public health approach to suicide prevention, President Trump's roadmap will equip communities to help veterans get the right care whenever and wherever they need it. The PREVENTS Task Force is co-chaired by White House Domestic Policy Council Director Brooke Rollins and Secretary Wilkie, and the roadmap released today calls for several steps to be taken further this critical national goal, many of which are all already underway. One of them is the National Suicide Prevention Activation Campaign. This summer, the PREVENTS Task Force will launch a nationwide public health campaign aimed at educating Americans that suicide is preventable, creating awareness of mental health and suicide prevention best practices with a call to action for all Americans to take the PREVENTS pledge to prevent suicide. A primary goal of the campaign is to change the culture surrounding issues related to suicide and mental health. The campaign will stress everyone has a role to play in the well-being of family members, friends, and coworkers. It will create awareness about risk and protective factors and encourage people to reach out to those who may be struggling. The campaign will rely on coordinated messaging from all levels of government and non-government partners, as well as national digital radio and television public service announcements. Efforts will focus on dissension in states with a high concentration of veterans. It will also rely on high-profile ambassadors who will help amplify these messages, including Second Lady Karen Pence and U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams. Improving suicide prevention research. Too often, efforts have focused on a one-size-fits-all approach to prevention, suicide prevention that fails to consider an individual's specific risk factors. As a key element of the roadmap, PREVENTS will launch the National Research Strategy to accelerate the development and implementation of effective solutions to help prevent veteran suicide. A critical first step toward this goal is the optimization of the current research ecosystem, which will accelerate the impact of veteran suicide research by enhancing interagency collaboration, evaluating the role of open science practices, leveraging team science, and enhancing data resources and analysis. The PREVENTS Task Force will have an initial assessment of the current research landscape by the end of 2020 and will simultaneously work with task force agencies and non-governmental partners to begin moving toward this goal. The development of the national... Yes, sir.
I'm back. I just want to let you know.
Oh, great.
Just finishing. Difficulty there,
but... Yeah. Well, the development of the national research will result in an increase in focus on the isolation of risk factors and identification of the most effective treatment practices and interventions for veterans. This all of nation approach will lead to a dramatic shift in the ability to prevent suicide for veterans and all Americans. Whether it's going to relieve it, who knows, but boy, it certainly sounds like a good start. Do you have anything more out there, David?
Well, that task force does sound like it's a major step. Coordination with a lot of different groups, organizations, universities, nonprofits, et cetera, as well as state and local government. So it seems like they're really trying to be as comprehensive as they can, and I certainly hope that that will help the tragic problem of not just veteran suicides, but suicides of everyone, of the entire population. That's such a tragic problem today. I do have some other news that might be of interest to veterans, and that's using technology, particularly important in this time of social distancing and closures because of the COVID-19. The VA announced this past week that the Veterans Benefit Administration has reached more than 1 million veterans and family members through telephone town hall meetings held coordinating with certain states across the country. They are weekly meetings that highlight VA benefits and give people an opportunity to communicate directly with the VA Undersecretary of Benefits for Benefits, Paul R. Lawrence. Secretary Lawrence will brief listeners during these telephone town hall meetings and then take questions and then conducts these meetings to ensure the veterans have accurate and up-to-date information and don't have to rely on just the rumor mill. As of last week, the Veterans Benefit Administration had conducted 25 of these telephone town halls. The next town halls will be this week, actually tomorrow, Tuesday, June the 23rd, and then Thursday, June 25th, both at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's 2 p.m. Pacific Time and 5 p.m. Eastern Time. These briefings will include updates about the VA's response to COVID-19 and the GI Bill, along with the launch of the Blue Water Navy Act, the Solid Start Program, and other new VA initiatives to include the Veterans Benefits Banking Program, helping veterans to understand and access all services and benefits needed. So veterans and their families are encouraged to join and ask questions about their benefits. There is a number to call in if you want to grab your pen and paper. This is for the VA Town Hall. It's 1-844-227-7557. Again, the number for the telephone town halls by the VA is 1-844-227-7557. That's 1-844-227-7557. Again, the next town hall is tomorrow, June the 23rd at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Then the next one will be Thursday, June 25th. And those have been very popular so far. The VA's held 25 of them as of last week, reaching more than a million veterans and their families. So that's what I have. Rick, back over to you.
Well, I'm just trying to think. Another interesting thing, if there are any lawyers listening, I doubt there are, but if there are any lawyers out there, another thing that I found out just recently is that when it comes to our attorney's fees, and apparently the attorney's fees are also in the national queue, something I learned for the first time last week. So that's just like with the veterans, you know, the way the national queue works basically is that if you file a case for a veteran, any staffer can go to the national queue and pull that file up and work on it. Whether, you know, if the veteran resides in Florida and you file it, you know, out of your lawyer's Florida office, anyone in the national queue can, in Boise or Newark, New Jersey or San Diego, California, can go in and access that file. Well, apparently the attorney fee thing is the exact same way, which is, you know, another, in my opinion, humble opinion, is another reason why we've got a lot of problems in the delay of getting responses out of the VA. So that was something that I learned for the first time after doing this for almost 8 years now, David. So,
yeah, well, veterans are primarily going to be concerned about their own benefits, less so for attorney's fees, but it will affect them to some extent because, as sometimes happens, the VA, even though there's a regulation that provides for it, and a lot of attorney fee agreements that veterans will have with their attorney, says that the VA will set aside the attorney fee, and then after a period of time, usually 60 days or longer in reality, to give the veteran opportunity to
to agree to or dispute that fee, then the VA will then pay that on to the accredited representative. But sometimes the VA messes up and they don't do that. And that's where the veteran does have an interest and is affected, because then the VA will then retroactively go after the veteran's pay, and that's an unhappy situation. So in any event, it's a complex arena, the VA disability world. It would sure would be nice if they would simplify it. It would help help veterans, and that's the ones we need. We are most concerned about veterans and their families. So,
yes, all right, that's for sure.
All right,
I guess
well,
we're ready to close for the night.
Well, I'll make one more public service announcement, if you will. It's something
sure.
we talked about on the program in the past, and it's an organization that I think requires more attention, really, because you never hear about it in the media, really any media, and that's the United States Institute of Peace. United States Institute of Peace, or USIP. The website is usip.org. You may ask yourself, what is the United States Institute of Peace? Well, it's a national, nonpartisan, independent institute. It was founded by Congress in 1984 during the Reagan administration, and it's dedicated to the idea that a world without conflict, without violent conflict, that's the key, is possible, practical, and really essential to U.S. and global security. So the United States Institute of Peace, which is funded by Congress, in other words, they don't accept private donations. It was funded, it's funded by Congress, a relatively small budget of under $38 million a year. I know $38 million sounds like a lot, but whenever the Defense Department is getting over $700 billion a year, you'll see you can see the big disparity there. Not that it's one or the other, but the United States Institute of Peace serves a very valuable purpose, and it was originally created by some members of Congress who were World War II veterans, and they wanted an educational organization equivalent to the service academies, equivalent to West Point, Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, et cetera, to basically study and educate and inform, work on peaceful conflict resolution, which is really in everyone's interest. So they have an educational and research role, but they also have a practical application role, which is to be out in countries, actually in conflict zones around the world, at the community level, but also at the national and regional levels these nations in conflict, to focus on how can they work on really practical initiatives to promote peace. So I just want to make a public service announcement about the United States Institute of Peace. Go to usip.org. Their headquarters is in Washington, D.C., on the northwest corner of the Washington Mall. It's just a block or so north of the Lincoln Memorial, and it's just a block away from the State Department. And check it out. I'd venture to say, Richard, as you and I have discovered in sort of informal polling, most Americans have never even heard about it. So that's why I'm mentioning it. So back over to you, Rick.
Thank you, David. And just want to remind everybody, our guest next week is going to be Mike Partain. Mike is very active with the Camp Lejeune water contamination issues, and he was instrumental in helping to get the act passed for to help you Marines who were exposed to water contamination at Camp Lejeune. There's still a lot of work to go, and Lord knows Mike's not done yet, and he'll be on the show next week to tell us all about the latest development and where we stand, what the problems are. So put it on your calendar, and you know, if you are a veteran who was stationed at Camp Lejeune during the periods of 1953 to 1987, and you not only were exposed to the contaminated water, but you also have some of the illnesses from that, you might want to tune in and listen to Mike and call in and ask Mike some questions.
Yeah. Rick, we're about out of time, so let me just go to an abbreviated we're just
coaching
really about out
program.
Of time. Let me go to the abbreviated coaching into care, and
okay.
Then we'll close out. We remind everyone every week about the VA's Coaching into Care program to help veterans transition from civilian life to home life. It's a valuable free coaching service. Its toll-free number is 1-888-823-7455. It's hours Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Then there's the Veterans Crisis Line, which is separate from that, 24-7, 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. That's the Veterans Crisis Line to help veterans in any sort of crisis, suicidal, but really any other sort of crisis where they need help. All right, well, it's time for us to go. We'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Michael W. Hogan, the Chief Advancement Officer for PAWS for Purple Hearts. Check out their website, pawsforpurplehearts.org, and donate if you can. We'd like to thank you all for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, and thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, and 4 p.m. Pacific Time here on BBSRadio.com, Station 1. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy and have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.